Okay, so again, Chumash Parshas Chayei Sarah, Perek. Let's see here. Perek Chaf Dalet, Pasuk Chaf Beis. Okay, so basically, the story goes
that. Now, tomorrow's Rosh Chodesh, right?
Oh no! Thursday and Friday. Tomorrow night.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yep. Yeah. So the story goes that Avraham had a son Yitzchak, and he wanted to get a wife for his son Yitzchak. Okay. So he did is he sent his servant. Basically, he sent his servant to his hometown to get a wife. Okay, to where he's from. Okay, and now the thing is that his son, for whatever reason, Yitzchak wasn't supposed to leave Eretz Yisrael, so Yitzchak wasn't going to go down there. Okay, so what Eliezer, who is the servant of Avraham, Eliezer's job was to get a wife for Yitzchak. Okay, and he had to go down there, and he had to find the right girl, and he had to convince the family to let him go. Okay. He had to convince the family of the girl to let him go. So what he did is a story, just to make a long story short, he basically went to the well, and he davened to Hashem that to make him successful. And he basically said that that Hashem, who the girl who I ask to if she could give me water, right, and if she says, when I ask a girl to give me water, if she says, "Here, drink water. I'll draw water for you, and also I'll give your water to your camels," that's the girl who Hashem you have picked for Yitzchak. Okay, that will be the sign, the indication that she's the right girl. Again, I'm just going to ask her for water for me, and if she says for me and my camels, then I'll know that that's the right girl. Okay.
Wait, who prescribe those conditions?
Eliezer, the servant of Avraham, davened to Hashem and prescribed those conditions. Okay? So, and also it had to be that she was from the right family, because Avraham wanted someone from his family. Okay, so who had a good yichus, if you will. Okay? Fine. So sure enough, right when he finished saying this prayer to Hashem, so sure enough, Rivka appeared. And Rivka was from the right family. She's the, she's her father, whatever. She's related to Avram. And she basically came out, and she had this jug of water on her shoulder, right? On her shoulder. And she was very beautiful. And she was a Besula. She was a virgin. And she came to the well. And it says, it makes a point that she's a virgin. People, the girls in those times were very promiscuous. But she was very, She stayed away from any man, and she went to the well and she filled up the water, right? And the guy Eliezer ran to her, and he said to her, "Please give me some water from your jug." So she said, "Drink," and she ran and she got him to drink. And then after he finished drinking, she said, "Let me give you also to your camels," until they finished drinking. And sure enough, she ran and she got the water for all his camels. And he was waiting to see if Hashem would make his path successful. He was basically excited. And I guess he just had to make sure that she was from the right family. But it says he took, right when the camels finished drinking, he took a golden nose ring, which weighed a beka. Okay, it's a certain weight. And he took two bracelets. Shneitzmidim al yadeha, on her hands, which are ten, the weight of 10 golden shekel each. Okay? And he asked her whose family she's from, and sure enough, she said, "In the right family, and you could stay here," and then he bowed down to Hashem and thanked Hashem that basically this is the right girl. Okay? So basically, the part we're going to focus on is what he gave her, the jewelry which he gave her. Okay, so he gave her this jewelry, this nose ring which weighed a beka, two bracelets which weighed 10 shekel, golden shekel each. Or each altogether, I guess. Okay, so Rashi is a funny Rashi. He says, beka, what's the idea? Who cares the weights of these things? Why is that relevant at all, right? So Rashi says a beka happens to be the same weight as the machzis hashekel. Okay? So in the Torah, when every year, every Jew has to give a half a shekel to go towards the karbanos. Okay, it's a mitzvah of giving a machzis hashekel. Okay, he has to give it to the communal pot, and they take it and use it for the karbanos. So he says, Rashi says, this beka, that was the weight of it. So the beka is a remez, it's a hint to this, the shekelim that the Jews are going to give. Okay? And then he says, the shnei tzmidim, the two bracelets, are a reference to the shnei luchos mitzumados. The two luchos, the tablets, which are a pair. So tzmidim, first of all, it's two. Shnei, two luchos, two bracelets. And tzmidim, which means bracelets, also can mean mitzumados, like paired. Two paired tablets. Right? So it's a remez, it's a hint to the two tablets. And the weight of these two bracelets was 10 shekel. 10 shekel. So that's a hint to the Aseres Adibros, the 10 commandments, which are on those luchos. Which are on the old tablets. Okay? So basically, what Rashi's saying, what he's doing here, is he's showing how the jewelry which Eliezer gave to Rivka is some sort of a hint or an allusion to the future half a shekel, and the future luchos, and the future Aseres Adibros, the 10 commandments, which are on the luchos. Okay? So, any questions?
I mean, I'm not clear on why it's relevant that those items, I mean, other than they happen to represent the weight of the shekels and all that, I don't understand what the relevance is.
Right. Okay, good. Right, that's on the surface, that's a problem. What's the relevance altogether? He's hinting at those. What do those things have anything at all to do with the jewelry which he's giving her? Okay. Good. Anything else?
Along the same lines, I mean, how would Eliezer have any frame of reference for these things?
Okay, good. Does Eliezer know somehow through prophecy or something that the weight of the shekel is going to be a half a beka, and that there are going to be two tablets and they're going to have 10 commandments? Are we to assume that he knew that through someone told him that, Avram told him that? And even if so, was he hinting that to Rivka? Was Rivka somehow to know that? Like, it's just strange. Is that why he's picking these weights? Because he's somehow, is he trying to allude this to her? I mean, that would be strange. How is she going to know that? And she just gives her a bracelet, a nose ring, and she says, isn't that interesting? That nose ring is a beka. It reminds me of Machzis Shekel. It's not like they were well-versed in the details of the Torah. It doesn't seem. I mean, unless you say, even if you say maybe they had by prophecy, but to that degree, is that, like, what's the connotation? Is he was hinting it to her? We're sending it to us? It's like, it's hard to understand. Like, what do you make of this type of a hint? And if it's not why he chose those weights, then why did he choose those weights? Is it just a coincidence that it happens to be that it matches up with these weights?
What happened? This is probably everybody else on this call knows the answer to this question. I just don't. What happened after they got married? Was that the beginning of, like, some great...
Yeah, I mean, sort of. Yeah, they finally, she ended up agreeing. The father, he had to sell it, basically, to her father and her brother. He basically convinced them. They agreed. They said, after all, after this sign happened, it must be Hashem wants this to happen, and they basically let her go. And then she came back, and she married Yitzchak. And then they had Yaakov and Esav, you know, Jacob. And then he had the 10 to 12 tribes. And then basically that was the beginning. This is the beginning of Klal Yisrael. So these were the patriarchs and the matriarchs. This is basically the foundation, the second generation of the nation.
So is there any, you know, there any relevance to what I asked and what you answered to the question at hand, or is that just...
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. That's, I guess, part of the challenge here. I mean, the you could loosely connect them, but it's a very loose connection, you know? But it's a good thing to think about. But, I mean, it's kind of tenuous. I think you'd have to develop the point somehow, because, you know, it's a funny time to make the connection. The jewelry that he gives her, I mean, there's a lot of different parts of the story. To make it tied into the jewelry, the specific weight and number and whatever of the jewelry, just seems like somewhat of a stretch. Right, and the thing is, like, there are multiple Rashis in the Torah that are like this, you know? It's interesting, it would be nice to try to get some approach. How do we approach a Rashi like this, you know? What was that? I mean, is there a specific connection for like a one-to-one correspondence somehow?
Yeah.
I don't know. Good question. Yeah.
Can I offer up one kind of general approach?
Yep, sure.
Yeah. I would think that maybe what the, I don't know specifically, but the general idea is perhaps that, you know, this is not just your normal sort of interaction, right? Normal interaction is, okay, you know, somebody in Eliezer's position, okay, he's a messenger for Abraham, and he's trying to help, get Rivka interested, it's pique her interest in, a good opening for Abraham, you know, for Yitzhak.
Okay.
And so, you know, to say like, okay, so what was going to draw her in? So I think Rashi and I guess the Chazal are trying to get at it, that this was not just simply, okay, so she was attracted to, like, you know, gold and silver and, you know, the material objects, but saying that there must have been something more to it that really drew her in.
Okay.
Something that, you know, these things were, you know, she saw that this was not just, okay, you know, there was riches, but there was some you know, riches for a certain end. Like there's some concept and idea that must have, you know, she saw. It wasn't just
right.
Eliezer giving her jewelry, but there was some meaning behind
it. Okay, good. Okay, good. So why did he give her the jewelry?
Well, you know, it's not, she's not inhuman. You know,
right.
It has to have some basis in
right.
normal human emotion. But
right.
It doesn't mean that it's exclusively that. Because if it
right.
was just, maybe it's pointing out that if it was just simply jewelry itself, then you know, she should marry Yitzhak because of that, and that was his lead-in, and there's nothing more, then she wouldn't have been interested at
all. Right. Yeah. Right. Okay, good. Okay, someone else? Yeah.
maybe in the way that he did it, it was, you know, clearly an intention thing. It wasn't just, you know, he didn't overwhelm her with all this jewelry. He gave her specific things, you know, again, for some specific idea. I mean, he could have, Avram was very wealthy, so he could have, you know, over, you know, bowled her over with like a gazillion things. He didn't do that.
Right. Okay. Okay, I hear you. Okay, so let me maybe elaborate. I have a similar approach. So the thing is like this, is that there's, see, part of what he was trying to do, see, this other thing is, and this is based on some, it reminds me of a shiur that Rabbi Chait once gave, which I'll reference more fully in a little bit later. But basically, what he was trying to do here, he had a dual mission. Eliezer had a dual mission that he was trying to accomplish here, which is on the one hand to convince Rivka to pick out the girl and convince her to marry Yitzhak, and secondly to convince her family, her father, her brother, to let her go. After all, it was a tall order. It wasn't enough just to find the girl. It was enough to find the girl and bring her back home with him, right? Because Yitzhak was not coming. Yitzhak was staying where he was. So she had to find the girl and convince the family to let her come. Let her leave their house and come back with them. Okay? And they knew they might be hesitant. They might be hesitant. So I'd like to argue here is that there were basically two things which are happening. Okay, or maybe like this. Maybe a way to look at it like this. If you read the story, you almost sound like, why did Rivka come? Because Eliezer threw riches at her. Right? After all, what did he do? He came. He met her. He asked for water. Says, wow, you're a great girl. I'm going to give you tons of gold, jewelry, beautiful stuff. You want to come marry my servant? My master? And she's like, okay, sure, great, I'll come. You know? It almost sounds like she's shallow and vain. That's it? You just throw jewelry at a girl and then she comes and agrees to marry you? Right? I mean, they asked the family, but it just seems like it makes her seem, the plainest pshat in the psukim almost presents a story like this is like a vain type of an attempt, right? Imagine someone meets some girl in a bar or somewhere and gives her lots of jewelry and says, you want to marry me? And she says, okay, fine. It just seems like I know this is a time where there were arranged marriages or whatever, but it just still seems like he's winning her over with wealth, with jewels, gold, right? So maybe that's what's bothering Rashi, is that's a strange way that this thing went down, right? So maybe the answer is that was not really for her. That wasn't really for her. It was really for her family. It was really for her family. And in fact, the Pasuk says when finally Lavan, who was her brother, who was the one who was in charge, somehow her father went off the scene, he died or something. So when the Torah describes it, it says Lavan came out, right? He came out to greet him. And when he saw the bracelets, the nose rings, and the jewelry on her hands, and he heard what happened, then he ran, right? And he greeted him, and he says, come on in, right? So it makes a point that he saw the jewelry, he saw the nose rings, and he saw the gold, the bracelets on her arms. So you see that he was moved by the money, by the great wealth. That was exciting for him. In fact, they say, there's another Rashi that says later when Yaakov came many years later, he was like feeling him up to try to see, where's your jewelry? So it's like for him, he was like a money-hungry guy. And that was partially, arguably, what convinced him, among other things, to let her go. So Eliezer knew that in order to convince them to let her go, he was going to have to make it worth their while and make them excited about this. And if you give her this jewelry on the spot, they're going to say, wow, look at this guy. This is a guy who we want to be in with. Right? Who knows what we're going to get? This is a good idea. Right? So So there, that's why Eliezer gave all that gold and silver, all the gold, the fancy the jewelry. Okay, not because Rivka, he assumed Rivka was vain. In fact, he was looking for someone who had good midos, who's a balas chasad, right? A kind person who's offering, feeding the camels, this, that. But not just the woman who was moved by jewelry. So it could be that's what Rashi is trying to account to do. Rashi says he doesn't like it, or he doesn't like there's an implication in the pasuk which Rashi is trying to correct, which is the implication is that she was won over by the nose rings and the bracelets, and Rashi's saying, and we'll elaborate on this more, but he's basically saying she was drawn in to marry to agree not because the gold and the silver, not because of the gold, but because of what Avram represented. Because of the ideas that she would gain by being with Avram. Because of the hint to the Shekel and the Luchos and the Ten Commandments. That was why she was in. She was sold and she wanted in because she knew what Avram represented. And because of what Avram represented, because of what these gifts alluded to certain ideas, certain concepts about what Avram stood for, and that's why she came. That's not why her brother agreed, but that's why she came. So that's what he's saying is like the particulars are a hint to these different ideas to try to highlight that was what she was about. So you have to read the story on two different levels. There's the plain shot in the story, which is the way it was designed to appeal to her family, but then there's the beneath the surface interpretation, which was the message to Rivka. Okay, now I have to get into the particulars a little bit, but that's the main idea I'm suggesting here. You guys with me?
Yep.
Okay, now. Now, what's the particular? So he's saying to her, and it's a little tricky, a few things. First of all, what are the ideas? And secondly, did he actually tell her these things? Was it actually the reason why he gave her exactly these weights? Let's ignore that problem for the time being, okay? Ignore that problem. It's like, is this literally what was going on? But let's just go with it for the time being, okay? Let's imagine he explained it to her, right? Let's imagine this is he actually said to her, I'm going to give you a nose ring, because I want to reference you the idea of the shekel, and I'm going to give you the luchos, the two bracelets to reference the luchos, the pair of luchos, and the debros. Let's imagine that's what happened, okay? Let's say it was explicit. So what would be the ideas which are being conveyed? Okay? So what does the machzor shekel have anything to do with it? So the machzor shekel is money which people give to the Beis HaMikdash. And they use that base of money for what? For Avodas Hashem, for Karbanos, right? And it could be what he's doing is he's giving her money, but he's basically conveying to her, you know, the real function of money, the highest purpose and objective of any money you're going to ever have, ultimately is for Avodas Hashem, it's to serve God. And the Machzor Shekel is a prime example of a mitzvah, which basically says every Jew has to give some of their wealth for the purpose of Avodas Hashem. And it brings to mind the concept of a true purpose of wealth. So yes, Rivka, I'm going to give you jewelry, and it might be appealing to you that you have this jewelry. But realize that the jewelry and the wealth ultimately is there for the purposes of directing it towards Avodas Hashem. Avram has great wealth, but he uses that wealth to win people over, to teach them ideas of Torah, to give them to be chesed, to give them food and drink and show them and teach them. So the wealth which you will be privy to, if you come into our house, will be wealth which is utilized for the purpose of Avodas Hashem, just like the of Machzor Shekel that Klal Yisrael is going to use is for the purpose of Avodas Hashem. You with me so far?
Yeah.
Okay, now secondly, he's saying is the Luchos, the pair of the Luchos. It's interesting because he's saying that Mitzumida means bracelets, and Shnei Luchos Mitzumados means like the pair of tablets. It's a pair. So what's the idea? So what's the idea? It's funny, the idea of the tablets are in a pair. They're two tablets. So what it reminds me of is that there's, I think Chazal say this, or there's a Ramban who says this, but basically that the two luchos are split. The ones on the first tablet are mitzvos which are between man and God, ben adam lamakom, and the mitzvah on the second tablet is mitzvos ben adam lachavero, between man and his fellow man. Okay? And the Torah, if you want to talk about the mitzvahs of the Torah, it really has, in a certain sense, like a dual objective. There's an objective of creating a relationship between man and God and setting up a society built around proper ideas of God. But it also has an idea of creating a society of a man of mankind, the proper society, where man has peace and there's social harmony. And that's a dual objective of the mitzvahs. The mitzvahs are also designed to be able to create a proper social, a proper society that built ultimately around the avodas Hashem. But there really are like two classes of mitzvahs. And the two tablets, it's like they're a form of pair. They're not altogether distinct. You don't really have the second tablets without the first tablet. The first tablet. The idea of our, you know, treating man properly is because we're trying to create a society which is conducive to serving God and towards the knowledge of God. And ultimately, our respect for people is because their God is a God-given right, and it's based upon God creating man and giving man tzaddik lekim and treating man specially. So there's a unification of the two tablets. They're a pair. And it could be as like, to what degree, we know Rivka at this point was a very big balas midos, right? She was a big balas chesed in terms of the camels or whatever, right? But the bottom line is, she was brought up in the house of Lavan, who was not a great metaphysician. In fact, he was a bit of a zara, right? As we see later. So she wasn't brought up with proper ideas, high level ideas of God. So it could be what he's saying is that you want to come to Beis Avraham, not only will you be able to have one tablet, the one which you already are good at, the Ben Adam Lachavero, but you will be able to come and excel in the other tablet, namely in the Ben Adam Lamakom, that there's a pair of luchos. And that's part of what Avraham has to offer you. He show you the synergy between your service of God and your chesed with people. Right now, you already have great kindness to people, but he's going to show you. You come into Beis Avraham, this is what Beis Avraham is about. It's about learning ideas of God and unifying them, the two tablets together. And this is part of why you should come. Not because you'll be able to continue your growth, extend your growth from growth of Ben Adam Lachavero to growth of Ben Adam Lamakom, to unify the total picture of perfection. And not only that, he's not just that he has a value of Ben Adam Lachavero Ben Adam Lamakom, but there are mitzvos, there are commandments, there's a formal system whereby he arrives at perfection of Ben Adam Lachavero Ben Adam Lamakom. So that's what he's saying, is it's a remez to the two tablets, with on them have 10 dibros, have 10 commandments, which is, again, the mitzvos are not just, there's an idea of just being a good person, may not be between you and God, between man and, you know, you and man, but Avraham Avinu is involved in formulating, you know, laws and a whole systematized manner of attaining these things, which it doesn't seem Rivka had. It seemed Rivka naturally or somehow had a great value system in terms of her midos, but Avraham Avinu is going to formalize it and set up the unification of these two together through mitzvos and through a formalized system. So it could be these are the messages that saying is, listen, Rivka, you want to come on board, because Avraham has the house of Avraham, and marrying Yitzchak will afford you these capabilities of proper relationship to wealth, proper extension of your values from Adam HaChaver to Ben Adam HaMakom, a formalized system which will allow you to grow in these areas. This is why you want to be here. And that's why Rivka came on board, not just because she was given beautiful jewelry, but because of the ideas that Avraham and Eliezer represented. That's why she came. That's not why Lavan agreed, but that's why Rivka agreed. And that's what Rashi's trying to bring out, different ideas which drew her in.
So it's not to say that Eliezer was trying to communicate those messages when he gave her those things, but the Torah, it's basically just showing that that's what was somehow...
That's a good question. Right. Well, that's the next question. So what is... But bottom line is, why did he give her these weights? And what are the ideas right? Like, did he convey these particular ideas to her? And did he say to her, these are the weights? If not, then what is Rashi saying? Right? So I think like this. This is what I think. I'm not sure about this. But I think ultimately, this the reason why she went was because of these ideas of Torah, the ideas of Avraham Avinu, the ideas of Yitzhak. And maybe she knew those ideas. Maybe he conveyed them to her. The Torah doesn't have to tell us every single conversation which happened. So maybe there was a conversation, right? Maybe Avram was well known. It could be she already knew these ideas and knew this is what Avram represented, and that's why she was happy to come along. Or maybe, again, maybe he had explained it to her. But I want to claim it's like the weights were basically, these are the weights. The weights are the weights. The weights, this is what they happen to be. He didn't choose these weights in order to convince to tell her these ideas and those particulars. To me, that seemed like you could say that he did, but to me, it seems a little bit of a stretch to say that he knew these exact numbers and he told them, and it seems like a little bit of a stretch to me. I'd rather say that basically he gave them these are the weights. The Torah pointed it out maybe to reference us to something, but basically this is what it was. The plain pshat in the psukim is he gave her a lot of jewelry, like expensive stuff, big, you know, a heavy nose ring, and two heavy golden bracelets. And that's what it's trying to do, the pshat, the psukim. And it's telling you the measurements to show you how much it was. So you know how much it was. It was significant. It was chashuv. It was an amount that when Lavan saw it, he says, wow, this is great. Right? But the Medrash is doing, the Medrash maintains that it's clear to the Medrash that Rivka was not about that. And she was not moved because of the gold. And therefore, the Medrash does in a creative way. It's like a poetic license, if you will, that it takes the measurements which the Torah tells us, and it lays particular idea Torah ideas on top of them. It fits it into the words, different ideas, and that's the creativity of finding the things. But like, look, you could, if it were three, maybe you would have said a different idea. Maybe you would say he told her about the Avos or about Kohanim v'Yom Yisraelim, or I don't know. There are a lot of different ideas which you could put to a lot of different numbers. If you're creative, you know, you come up with a lot of different things. So that's not the essence is not the particular, the luchos and the tentibros and the masa shakel, as much as he conveyed to her foundational ideas in Yahadus. And whatever the numbers are, I'm sure you could find different ways to do it. That's the creativity of the Medrash, to work out good ideas. And these are good ones, and they fit the story perfectly. They fit the story well. But if you want to have different ideas, you can have different ideas, and if the numbers were different, you come up with different. The point is not the particular ideas that he told her. It's the system and the framework which he conveyed to her, and these are just two or three examples of ideas which he could have conveyed to her. But it could be he conveyed to her many ideas, or other ideas, or she knew different ideas. But again, it's the Medrash which is taking a license to fit it in the particulars, to show you that to attach an idea which the Torah holds, which, you know, which the Medrash holds is clear to anyone who knows what Rivka was and what a tzedekus was, is clear that's not what was going on. And the gold and silver, well, the gold was for Lavan, and the rather what moved to her was the ideas. And we don't know what ideas he told her, we don't even know what ideas she knew. Maybe he didn't have to tell her. Maybe the reputation preceded him. But the Medrash is just giving you an example of one type of thing he might have said when he gave her the jewelry, and that what she was thinking, what he was thinking. But not necessarily that was why he chose those weights. You with me?
Yeah, I didn't.
What's that?
No, go ahead, Ellie. I'm sorry.
Okay. Moshe, did I answer your question?
Yes.
Okay. Now, by the way, I was going to tell you, the pshat that Rabbi said, I think, is in line with this, or maybe it was an inspiration for me to think of this, but he wanted to say that there's this... There's a funny Gemara, which basically says that what Eliezer, there's an Isser called Nichash, okay, divination. And you're not allowed to basically make a sign. If X, Y, Z happens, then I'm going to go on the trip. And if it rains, if I flip a coin and it gets heads, then I'm going to go. And if the stick falls out of my hand, then I'm not going to go on this vacation. Or, you know how to make signs for yourself. That's an answer. It's type of like under the category of Odzara type of a thing. It's like superstitions. So the Gemara wants to know, well, what exactly is the model of what's considered a nichosh? So the Gemara uses Eliezer as a model. Okay? That if anyone doesn't do nichosh like Eliezer, or namely, like basically Eliezer said, if she says, let the camels drink, then I'm going to marry her. Then I'm going to choose her, and if not, not. So he's like mamish relying on the sign. And he says that's an example of nichosh. It says anyone who doesn't do it like that, like Eliezer, isn't nichosh. So the question was, is that a steep accusation? Eliezer was a big tzaddik. And it seems to be the story was a good story. So why is Eliezer doing something which on the surface is nichosh? Right? So Rebbe said very nicely is that Eliezer knew that these people he was coming to were superstitious people. And he knew that he had to win them over. And he knew if he just came to them by just making them a normal, rational proposition, they wouldn't have been moved. So he knew he had to set up to make it look like it was a godsend. And there was some appeal to their mystical sense that this is sent by God and they have to let it go. And in fact, when they agreed, they says, "May Hashem yatzah davar," and how could we possibly let it stop you? So it's like he specifically orchestrated the events. If he were doing it, he wouldn't have necessarily done it in this type of a way, where he had this exact formula, that you know. But he was mispalel to Hashem. He was going to do the formula, and he was mispalel to Hashem that formula would come to fruition. And when it did, then he was able to utilize that on Lavan, basically to convince him to let her go, and it worked like a charm. So my point is that that's, I think, a similar point to this, is that there's two frameworks going on here. There's Eliezer's cheshbon in his own framework, and then there's Eliezer trying to create an appearance and a pitch for for Lavan and Bisuel to let her go. Okay? Okay, now there's a related Rashi, okay, in the story also, which basically says, unless there's a question, I'm going to move on to something related, but a little different. Okay, so basically, is the Rashi, what's that, Gad?
Can I just ask a question on case
points
that come out? Yeah. So you're saying that kind of these Rashis are kind of like a, it's kind of like a something that is taking place, I don't know, like it's sort of, it's not something that was part of the encounter between Eliezer and Rivka so much, but rather it was more, the Torah's just sort of, I guess it reminds me of kind of an asmachta, like it's not really, not the intent of the psukim per se to convey that, but it's sort of just a,
right.
It's something that kind of you can reflect on, but it's not something that was kind of part of the event of the story itself.
Sort of, not explicitly those exact words, but I mean that content, the ideational content, it could be was part of their conversation. You know, it could be he told her about Avram and he gave her a little shiur and he explained to her what why she should want to do it. I'm saying that either he said something like that or she already knew that. I don't know what she knew. But not that he said the luchos are connected, the two the luchos, and I'm saying not that,
So, I guess if that's the case, I guess the way the stories seem to be conveyed in the Torah, you're saying it would not be important for the Torah to have any explicit, information that, Eliezer obviously conveyed a certain idea to Rivka, the Torah sort of plays it very quiet and
yeah,
like
yeah,
seemingly the
That's true. But it could be as the Torah knows that she was a tzaddik. As it conveys to you that she basically was a tzaddik, as she was giving the water and all that, and she ended up coming into the base of Ram and she's willing to go. I don't know. I mean, that's why I'm saying Rashi's filling it in for you. I don't know. It's a good question. Is there anything in the psukim themselves which would indicate this tzio, or is it just rather the Torah Shebaal Peh filling it in? I'm not sure.
Right, I guess it's sort of like the. I mean, I could see, okay, so, you know, like, there's nothing compelling to not say anything because it should be,
right, it's conveying to you her tzidkas.
Look into it, it makes sense.
Right.
But, I don't know, it just seemed like that might be an important point for the Torah to show.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah, I hear you. It could be is that the Torah was, it's like the way the Torah writes it, though, it's like it says almost the same story twice. First it tells you the story, how it happened, and then the story of how he told it over to Lavan. And it's basically like the same story, basically, twice. Almost identical. So maybe it's like it would have to put in a detail into the story, which he would then not tell over to Lavan, because that's not going to be part of the conversation with Lavan. You know what I mean? So maybe the Torah is specifically writing in a way that the two stories are symmetric, even though there might have been certain details which were discussed, you know. But I didn't say you're saying is would there be some sort of illusion? I mean, I don't know. You could say, like, why does it have to tell us the exact measurements or something like that? You know, the Torah is, you know, maybe giving me more information to show that there was some hidden allusion to something, or I don't know. I don't know. It's a good question. I hear your question. Is there something in the Torah Shebaal Peh which alludes to this, or is this just Rashi, the Torah Shebaal Peh? I don't know. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so now, it says like this. There's one Rashi, a short Rashi on Yud Zayin. It basically says, when he right away, right after he finished his prayer to Hashem, he saw her. Right, so Rivka came out with her jug on her shoulder, and she's very beautiful, and she basically filled up her pitcher from the well, right? And v'tamale kada v'ta'al, right? So she filled up her well and her pitcher and ascended. And Rashi says, and then he ran to her. He ran. So why is he running to her? So Rashi says, l'fi shara sha'alu hamayim l'krasa, because he saw the water rise up to greet her. Okay? He saw the water rise up to greet her. And since the water was up to greet her, I guess he had like a good, so to speak, indication from Hashem that she's really the right girl. Okay? Because he saw the water rise up to greet her. Right? So I guess the question is that, really? That's my question. Did that really happen? That the water, like, miraculously rose up to greet her? I don't know, so I can't tell. Does it mean that that's literally what happened, that the water miraculously rose up to greet her, and he saw that that's the case, and then he, you know, knew it was her because there was a miracle like that? I mean, what? It doesn't seem like you need a miracle here. After all, he's doing a good plan. Seems like the plan is a good plan. Is it really necessary to have a miracle of water rising up? You know? And there's a medrash on this. It's quoting from a medrash. And the medrash says, Hashem said, this water rising up is like a siman to your kids, to the Bnei Yisrael, because the Bnei Yisrael in the desert, there was a be'er that went up and rose up to them, and they sang a song, Oz Yashir Yisrael, Shir Azos, Ali Be'er Enula. They sang a song about Shabbat, the well, like, rising in the desert to give them water. So it's like an allusion to, like, This event is like a siman, some sort of sign to Klal Yisrael that they're going to also have a well rising up, if you will. But, I mean, it's strange. Is that, and it just seems to be like these stories on the surface are happening according to the natural law. And like Avram was surprised, I mean, I guess when Sarah got pregnant at an old age. But on the surface, there aren't really open miracles. I mean, maybe that is one exception, but you see Avram and Sarah are both shocked that such a thing would happen. But just to say that, it just seems a little bit superfluous to really have a real change in the laws of nature of water just rising up out of a well to greet her. When for what? Just to show Eliezer? I mean, he seemed to make a good experiment. What do you need a miracle like that for? Right? And you kind of had this last week also. I mean, I gave a shiur about this last week also, but that by the case by Eliezer, Avimelech and Avraham, they're fighting about a well, and the water rose up to greet the servants of Avraham, and that kind of proved he was right. But I don't know, you have this like funny theme about this like water rising up. Right? You guys, you have the problem, right?
Didn't he have that by Pot
Rebel also? Oh, that was by the, yeah, he went to the bathroom and the water rose up to him, and so he was in the Nile or something? Yeah, maybe. It's not quite a well, but yeah, it's true.
I'm sure a different point.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, someone else? Okay, something similar to that. That he basically, if you look at the plan, it looks like a very natural plan. And things, you know, he made a good plan, it was a rational plan, and it worked out. Right? But maybe it's like the Torah wants, the Rashi wants you to see that on the one hand, it's true. He made a good plan. See the girl who would say this thing, it would be an indication that they're Gimel Chesed, and then everything's great. And it happened, and it worked out. Baruch Hashem. But you see that he davened that this would happen right beforehand, that it would work out, and he bowed to Hashem when it did work out. And maybe what the wants to show you is that although this wasn't a miracle, like an open miracle, like literally water rising up, but there was clearly a hashgacha. It was like a hidden miracle. Almost like the difference between like the Nisim and Mitzrayim and the Megillas Esther. Like Megillas Esther wasn't an open miracle, but it was clear from the coincidence of all the factors in Megillas Esther that it was like a Nisim Esther, there was a hidden miracle. So I'm saying here too, it's like, first of all, it says the moment he finished davening, he saw Rivka coming out. That's like a shocking coincidence. Rivka happens to be the right girl, right at the second he finishes doing his tefillah. And not only is she a good girl, she's a besula, she's totally different from the other girls of that town. She was not promiscuous, she was a kadosh, you know, she was at a high level. She was from the right family. She followed his script like clockwork, which left no doubt about it that it would work. It ended up being perfect to convince Lavan and Besula, and they went along with it. Lavan went along with the plan afterwards. Like, this whole plan, on the one hand, you could look at it as like a, just things perfectly worked out. But at the other hand, if you think into it, and you see how it worked to a T, of total perfection, it indicates to you that basically there was hashgacha here. This was a miracle. It was a hidden miracle. Like, it didn't have to be that she was the first girl who he happened to bump into. It could be he bumped into 10 other girls first, and they weren't good. And he does the experiment, and then finally it works out. Or maybe, I don't know, whatever. A lot of things could have happened. But it's like it worked out so perfectly, and that's why he initiated right away, like bowed to Hashem and gave Hodah that it worked. So it was like, it was a big deal. So it could be that the Rashi is telling you, it's like he saw the water rising up to her. Means like he saw how his plan, right away, immediately, he saw a girl, she was very beautiful. It could be she could tell that she wasn't hanging out with the guys, or she looked like a tsanua. Something about the whole scene and the way it happened so instantaneously. It's like he saw his plan and he saw the hashgacha working, as if there was a miracle that the water rose up to her. So it didn't actually rise up to her in an open way, but it's like it was so perfect how everything was working out that you couldn't help but see the Ad Hashem. Similar again to Megillas Esther, where the Jews all saw, then they accepted the Torah out of Ahava because they saw the great salvation from Hashem. And that's why I think it may be by Avraham and Avimelech also, if they give a whole shiur about this. But the water rose up, it means it was clear to Avimelech that Hashem was under Hashgacha. Because there's earlier Rashi which says that he saw that he was successful with Sodom, and he was successful with against the kings, and that she became pregnant. And like that was partially what made it that Avimelech was willing to accept Avraham. And Avimelech said, I see Hashem is with you. And then ultimately he won the argument with the wells because he saw the water rise up to him, which means that it was clear that he was being helped by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that's what I'm saying. It's like the water rising up maybe is like, although it sounds like an open miracle, but there's such a thing as a hidden miracle, which is clear and manifest because of all the details are working out perfectly. And maybe that's what the Rashi is trying to bring out, is you might miss the degree of hashgacha, which is manifest from the story, if you just read the psukim. It might just look like a total lucky, practical story that happened to work every detail out. But if you think about it, you realize that this is really hashgacha Hashem. And it could be that's what the Medrash is saying, is this is a siman to your offspring, is there will be a time where water will actually rise up. And the Jews are in Eretz Yisrael, in the Midbar, or whatever, it could be there will be open miracles in the Midbar. Like the Man and the water and the Be'er and all that. But this is like, this is the same type of a Hashgacha. It's just that here it's not done in an openly miraculous fashion. And there it seemingly was. But the point is that this event is foundational, and this gets back to what I was saying at the beginning, it's part of the foundation of the Jewish nation. And there was hashgacha to make sure it would happen, just like there's going to be a foundation hashgacha to make sure that Klal Yisrael is going to subsist in the desert. So there's like a reference that Hashem does miracles for these types of things. Although in this framework it was done in a hidden way. But again, the Rashi is just trying to bring out that there is a miraculous dimension here, or a hashgachic dimension, which it doesn't want you to miss. Good? Okay, now if you want to think about, I don't know, maybe I'll do this next week, I don't really know, but I have a nice pshat, I just don't know if I'll do it or not. But the question was how old was Rivka at the time? Okay? So, how old do you say?
Three.
So Rashi, in the beginning of Toldos, second pasuk, basically says she was three. So, I'd like to...
3 years old?
What?
3 years old?
Got your attention, huh? Yeah.
Okay.
3 years old. So that's basically the question. My question is that, does he really mean that? And if so, really? And if not, then why is he saying it? So, you know, he seems serious, because he makes a whole calculation to support it. At the same time, it seems somewhat far-fetched. So, you know. So maybe I'll take that up next time. We'll see. Maybe not. Just a tease. All right?